try to pick up here on Daf Nun Ches Amid Beis, and it's approximately almost halfway down the Amud B'mai Ukimta, and we're going back to the first Brisa. We had a few Brises here on Daf Nun Ches Amid Alf. The first Brisa says that as far as Zug, a bell on an animal, whether it's Biksusa, whether it's Bitzavara, is Zevize Ein Mekablin Tuma. And in order to explain that Bryce as to why a Zug is not Mekabel Tuma, the Gemara had answered that it was Lesle Inbal, that this bell didn't have the clapper on it, and therefore there was no way it could make any noise, make any music. And we had a drusha from the Pasuk called Dover Shayova Ba'esh, that Afilu Dibri Yova Esh, that a musical instrument that makes music is Mekabel Tuma, but not this bell, which is without an inbal. So B'mayu Kimta, how did you interpret that first price of the Lesle Inbal, and therefore cannot make music? Ema Mitziyasa. Let's go back to the Brisa, which speaks about the bells that are connected or worn by the slave, by the Eved. And it says, V'lo bezug shebet savaro, aval yotzehu bezug shebet suso, v'zev v'zev mekablim tuma. So let's focus on the tuma aspect here. We can talk about the distinction between the two types of zugos with regard to going out in a Rishus HaRab on Shabbos. But for the most part, our sugya now is focusing on Kabbalah's tuma. And we interpreted this brisa as referring to a case of Islay Inbal. And if it's Islay Inbal, then we don't understand why there should be any difference here. It says, Vizeh Vizeh Mekablin Tuma. So, Ida Leslay Inbal is Mi Mekabli Tuma. It cannot be a case where there's no clapper because such a bell is not Mekabel Tuma. It doesn't come under the halacha of Kol Dabar Sher Yovo Beish, Kol Dabar Afilu Dibur Yovo Beish. So therefore that's excluded. And on the other hand, if we're going to talk about Yesh Lahem Inbal, and therefore the Tmeim, and we'll see as the Gemara goes along what the Diuk is, or Aminu. Let's see if there's a contradiction between this and the next Brisa. So the Brisa says, Ha'ose zagin lemachteshes uliarisa ulemitpachos mitpachos farim mitchos tinokos is yeshlem inbal tmeim elem inbal tahorim. So now we're talking about a case where he makes bells for what's called ketisha machteshes, when they used to grind various spices and so forth. They used what's called a mortar and a pestle. The mortar is called a zag. So we have, he makes zagi l'machteshes, or the zag actually is a bell that he wants to attach to the mortar, and he's going to grind spices. The mortar was equipped with bells, the Gemara is going to tell us, because the sound during the grinding process enhances the aroma of the spices. And they used to attach bells also to the cradles of infants. And the nice sound of the bells used to kind of calm down the baby and lull him to sleep. And when you had Sifrei Torah, that let's say were used by the school children when they studied, then they on the mantles on the outside, the mantle, they would hang bells, and the teachers would carry the Sifrei Torah, and they would ring, and the children would know that it was time to come and learn. And what's the rule with regard to Kabbalah's Tuma in all these cases? And the Brisa says, Yeshlem Inbal Tmeim, Einlem Inbal Tahorim. So if they have their clappers, then it would be Mekabel Tuma, because it's going to make that sound. Einlem Inbal is Tahorim, and that's because the Torah says that bells in and of themselves are not kalim for Kabbalah's tumah. They have to be capable of dibur. And now the Brisa says, nitlu in balayim, adayin tumasam aleim. So it means that if they had a clapper and that clapper was removed, then the tumah remains. And that reflects a principle that once something was susceptible to tumah and it retains its status, unless again you make some sort of a change in the object, that's a little bit different. In any event, this brisa clearly states that a bell, if it didn't have a clapper, then it's not susceptible to Kabbalah's tumah. It's right because it says nitlu in Balayim is then adayin tumasam aleihem because it once had a clapper and it made this noise. So how then are we going to explain the middle case of the brisa, that the brisa says zeh v'zeh mekablin tumah? Clearly, a slave's bell is mekabel tumah even without the clapper. Morantz is honey mili betinok. When do we apply this brisa? We're talking about bells that are on the clothing of children. Dilkola avidale. These are made for the purpose of producing sound, as we said before, so that the students will know when to gather together and to learn the Torah. And the purpose of the bells was to alert also adults about the whereabouts of the children. So therefore, the bells mention the brisa for the purpose of producing sound. And therefore, without a clapper, they're not considered utensils, they're not kelim, and they're not makabel tumah. But gadol, but if you're talking about a bell that's worn by a slave, which is the subject of the first brisa, is tachshir hule. This is a tachshir, this is to adorn him, to ornament him, and therefore afagav to leslay inbal. We don't need the clapper, we don't need the musical sounds of the bell. Now at this point the Gemara seems to be backtracking on the original sheet of the Gemara, that a bell can be makabel tumah because it's a sound-producing keli, or alternatively, if it's a tachshit. So the status of the zug, of the bell, will depend upon what it was intended for. It was fashioned to produce sound, like in the case of a child's bell, then we need that it have a clapper and it has the capacity to produce sound. The first brisa, in the case of a cowbell, if it doesn't have a clapper, it's tar. This last brisa that we studied, in a case of a child's bell, that also is tar without a clapper. But if the bell was fashioned for the purpose of serving as an ornament, like in the case of the slave's bell, then it's makabel tumah even in the absence of a clapper. Omar mar nitlu in balehem adayin tumasam aleihem. Even if the clapper was removed, the status of tumah is still remains upon them. Lamai chazu, what do they fit for? In other words, if they can't be used any longer, why should their status as tmeim still remain? Because we said that if you have a physical change in an object that was tame, that's sufficient to remove tumah. Not only to make it ainam a kabel tumah if it's no longer a kli, but even to remove its tumah. That's called parcha bayavir. So if you take a clapper out of the bell, and that makes the bell incapable of producing sound, what you've in effect done is you've made this kli ice kli. It's no longer a kli because it no longer has any function. So the Gemara answers, Amar Abaye hoil sheha hejot yochol lehachziro. We only say that a physical change is mafkia tumah if it's no longer royal keli, to function, that's only because it was permanently removed and the change was permanent. But in this case, you don't have to be a professional, an artisan, in order to know how to melt this back onto the kli. It's very easily repaired. In other words, even someone who's not a professional would be able to return the clapper. Therefore, that's not enough for a maisa that had enough of a profound change in the object that it loses its tumah. Masiv Rava objects Abaye based on the Mishnah Zug Vainbar Chibur, which means that the bell and the clapper are treated as one item, as one entity, with regard to, let's say, Kabbalah's Tumen and Avatuma. We see clearly from this Brisa that a clapper is an integral part of the bell, and together they form a Chibur. And therefore it would make sense that if you remove the clapper from the bell is now an incomplete kli, and it should lose its status as Kabbalah's Tuma, v'chitei mahachi komar. And if you want to put it into the Mishnah and say this is what the Mishnah has in mind, that when the bell and the clapper attached to each other is afal gav delo mechaber keman de mechaber dummy, so it doesn't really mean physically attached, but it means that it's like it's attached. Alpidin is considered attached, even if physically it's not attached. And the Mishnah might be interpreting the halacha that was taught by Abaye, that even though the bell and the clapper are presently not attached, they are deemed to be attached, and you don't need a professional to reattach them. So they maintain their original status of tameh for asanya, but that's contradicted by a brisa. Because the brisa says that mispores shall prokim, the ismil shall rehitni, chibur lituma, the ein chibur laza. So we have a scissors that's made up of two blades, and you can take them apart or put them together. And then we have what's called a carpenter's plane, which has a very sharp blade, and it's attached to a handle, the wooden handle. And when the blade was inserted into the handle, when the tool was being used, then it would form one entity. There were grooves that are cut into the wooden handle so that the blade could fit into those grooves. But when the tool wasn't used and it was stored away, the blade and the handle were removed. And in these cases, and similar cases, it's called a chibur l'tuma, the ein chibur l'aza. And it sounds like we're being machmir l'tuma and mekil l'aza. We're machmir l'tuma, and therefore we're going to assume that it's all one entity as far as tumah. But as far as letara is concerned, here we're going to be machmir. We're going to say ein chibur l'haza. Haza means, in this case, the process of tara. If, let's say, for example, a kli was in an ola mess, and that kli requires haza twice before you do the actual sprinkling of the mechatos, and so let's go over both cases. If the tummy object touched one of the scissor blades, then both scissor blades will be makabel tumah. That's called chibur l'tumah. And the same thing in the case of the plane of the carpenter, it's considered one. Now, when it comes to the process of hazah, and what we mean is that we need hazah b'mechatos, which is sprinkling on these kalim to be metar them, then if the mechatos was sprinkling only on one, let's say on one of these two blades, it would not be valid for the other blade, litara. V'amrinon. And on this Mishnah, we ask the following question: Mimonefshach, ichibur hu. If they're one item, then afilu lahaza, they should be considered one entity, even as far as hazzah. So hazzah of one blade should be meaningful even for the other blade. Vi lo chibur hu, then afilu l'tumanami lo. If they considered two separate blades, two separate items, and kalim, each one independent, then as far as tumah is concerned, if an avat tumah would fall on one blade, why should the other blade be tumah? That's the miman of shach. In other words, do we define the attachment between these two blades as generating a status of one entity? And if that be the case, then it should work both lechumra and lekula. Not only to be metami both, if one came in contact with an avatuma, but even to be metire both in the case of hazah. V'yomar Rabba, and in explaining this whole halacha here, Rabba said the following. That there's a Doraisa halacha and there's a Durabonin halacha. Dvar Torah, according to the Torah law, there is a chibur, but it's conditional. Bishas malacha. When he's using the kli, then we need a connection, and through that connection, where together they form their function, is chibur. And that would be Bein Lutuma, Bein Laza. So if we're talking about Pshas Malacha, then we're going back to the Doraisa Halacha, and there's going to be Tuma and Tara in both directions as one single unit. And that's called Chibur Pshas Malacha. And again, keep in mind that Pshas Malacha, you must have this Chibur, because otherwise it won't function. Now we get to Shalo B'Shas Malacha. Now if it's Shalo B'Shas Malacha, he's not using them now, then Eino Chibur. Then we don't treat them as if they were attached, because Shalo B'Shas Malacha, we don't need them to be attached. And that goes also consistently Lo L'Tuma V'Lo L'Azah, which would mean a Kula and Tuma and a Chumra and Azah. Now, all that is on a Doraisa level. Now we get to a Drabon. Gozru al Tuma Shalo B'Shas Malacha Mishum Tuma Shehi B'Shas Malacha. Here's where the Rabbanon were machmir. On a Torah level, there's no Chibur for Tuma Shalo B'Shas Malacha, which would mean Shalo B'Shas Malacha, we view them, let's say these two blades in the case of this is as separate entity, two separate entities, two separate kelim, and there's no reason to be machmir. That's on a deraisa level. The Rabbanon instituted a gzera, and they were worried about the confusion that might come about between shalom b'shas malacha and b'shas malacha. So they said we have to go lechumra and tuma. Even Shalom B'Shas Malacha. So this Tumah, Shalom B'Shas Malacha, when the sheretz fell on one blade, and now we're going to be the time of the other blade, that's a Drabbanon, a Gzera, Atu B'Shas Malacha. Now let's turn to Hazah. Al Hazah Shehi B'Shas Malacha, Mishum Hazah Shalom B'Shas Malacha, which means that we're going to be Machmir in Hazah, even though it's Shas Malacha, which means that according to the Doraisa Halacha, the Hazah for one blade is sufficient for the other blade, but the Rabbanon are going to suspend that. They're going to require Hazah to be Matayer, a separate Hazah for each one of these two blades, because of Hazah Shalom B'Shas Malacha. Even though B'Shas Malacha, we view them, even Lekula, even as far as Tara is concerned, as one Chibur, and Hazah for one would work for the other. And that certainly should be meaningful, B'Shas Malacha. That's a Doraisa Halacha, because B'Shas Malacha, it's one entity, one Keli, both L'Chumra and L'Tuma, both L'Tame and L'Tayer. But now the Rabbanon are going to suspend the validity of the Hazah on one for the other, in a case of Shas Malacha, on a Doraisa level, that would be a perfectly great Hazah for both, and the Rabbanon can say no. And why are they instituting this gezeirah in the case of Shas Malacha? Because of Hazah Shalova Shas Malacha, where even on a Doraisa level, you would need Hazah for each one of these two parts or blades of the scissors. And this is how Rabbah explains the Braisa. The Braisa says that with regard to these special utensils that are made up of two parts that are used together with Chibur, that we treat them on the one hand as a Chibur in order to be Metame L'Chumra, and on the other hand, we treat them as disconnected, meaning no chibur, as far as Tara is concerned, as far as Hazah is concerned. But one thing is clear from the Braisa, that these kelim are only treated as one when they're connected. In other words, when we say the Vishas Malacha, there's a chibur, that's only when there's a physical chibur. That for sure we require. So therefore, if they were separated, then we would certainly clearly view them as two separate independent kelim. And your business about, you know, whether you could reattach them, and you don't need an uman, you don't need a professional, that doesn't seem to play any sort of role. And that is the objection of Rava against Abaye. Elama Rava, but now Rava has to come up with an alternative explanation, and that we'll see on the top of Daf Nun Tesa Min Aleph. Hoil v'ra'ui la'kisho al gabi cheres. He asked me about a bell, and what function could it have if its clapper was removed? It cannot make any musical sound. So why do we say that since it once had a clapper, it remains tome, and it remains susceptible to Kamal Tum even after its clapper was removed? And we asked what it functions for, and Abaye came up with his theory that you can, you know, even a regular, you know, simple person who's not trained, he knows how to put this clapper back in. Says Rava that it's Roy Lakisha Agavi Cheres. There is a function for this bell without a clapper. That is, we bang it against a kli cheres, an earthenware pot, and it actually makes a noise. Now, what is the significance of this noise? So let's just first mention that according to Rava, when the clapper was removed, it retains its status as far as Tumah is concerned, because it could perform in some way that resembles its original function. Again, even if I would need a professional to fix it, but there is some function of the bell that continues even after the clapper is removed. And that means that the bell could produce sound. How would it produce a sound? If you would strike it against a pot. Therefore, it remains susceptible to tumma, it's mekabel tumma. Now, this has a similarity to the case of a wooden utensil that was punctured with a hole. Let's assume that that hole was less than the size of a rimon, which means that a rimon, a pomegranate, would still remain in the kli. Again, other kelim would fall through the hole other fruits, that would be a better word to use. Other smaller fruits than a pomegranate is gigantic. Other smaller fruits, you know, like nuts and so forth, they could fall through a smaller hole. So as far as the use of this pot for, you know, as a kliotzar, meaning to hold on to a transport small fruits are concerned, this keli is no longer functional. Yet it's still mekabel tumah because it functions as long as it has a medium-sized hole to gather together rimonim. So you can put rimonim inside this utensil, because the hole is smaller than the pomegranate, and therefore it retains its status. And here we have the similar thing, that you could take this bell even without its clapper and clap it on a kli cheres. So let's just make a little bit of a summary, an overview of the laws of the tumah as far as bells are concerned. If the bell is worn by an animal, it's not susceptible to tumah unless it has a clapper. If it doesn't have a clapper, it's not susceptible to tumah, it's not a kli, and it's not worn by the animal, and you cannot give the bell the status of a tachshit. And therefore it's not makabel tumah. Now, if the bell that's worn by an animal is capable of making musical sounds, that means it has a clapper, then it's makabel tumah, because it produces a sound, and as we said before, that enables the owner of the cow to know, locate exactly where his cow is located. Now, let's go on to bells that are worn by men, meaning a slave. They are makabel tumah, even if there's no clapper, because in this case of a human being, we call it a tachshit. Now, with regard to a bell that's worn by a child, that's makabel tumah, but only if it has a clapper. Its primary purpose is to jingle and make a sound so that we can lull the baby to sleep, or whatever the sound of the bell is meaningful for. So that's makabel tumah if it has a clapper. Now, what happens if the bell has been manufactured but without a clapper, and the clapper is meant to be installed, but it hasn't yet been installed? That's called an unfinished kli, or a kli golem, and therefore the law is that it's not makabel tumah. Now, what happens in the case of a bell that had a clapper, but the clapper was removed, and the bell retains its status of a dover aroy lekabel tumah? It's a kli of sorts, because you haven't made enough of a drastic or radical change in order to remove the tumah. So the bell with a clapper that no longer has a clapper retains its original status as far as tumah is concerned. That's kind of an overview. And this leads us to Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, he has a different explanation as to why the bell is makabel tumah even after the clapper is removed. Hoil v'roi legamea bo mayim latino. This is familiar to us in the laws of Muktzah, when we spoke about a shofar, if you recall. And a similar idea here in the case of a zug, of a bell, that it could be used to offer a drink to a child, a young child. So again, it cannot produce sound, but still the bell has a function, and therefore retains its status as tameh, or roi lekabel tumah. Now, Rabbi Yochanan is really expressing the view that a bell retains its tumah status as long as it's useful, even if it's only useful as a cup. See, Rava before wanted to maintain the original use, or something similar to the use, may ein melachta rishona. And therefore he looked for a musical sound that would come out of this bell even without its clapper, by banging it on a kli cheres. But Rabbi Yochanan is not impressed with that, and he holds it would retain its tumah status even if the bell has no clapper, because it could be used as a drinking cup, and even though that use is not at all similar to the original use as a sound-producing musical instrument, but nevertheless, Rabbi Yochanan holds all you need is a general shame kli. It has some function whatever that function might be. So Rabbi Yochanan, in this case of a bell that has no possibility of making musical sound, retains its tumah because it's royal gamer bo samayim, says the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan lo boy me'ein malach rishona, as far as maintaining status for tumah, Rabbi Yochanan holds that we don't need that it still functions in any way similar to its original capacity, vasanya, but we have a drush and a brisa. The pasuk says, "V'chol hakli asher yeshev olav hazov," and we're talking about a parasha of midras tuma, which is a tuma that's transmitted when a person who's tame, like a zav, or a woman would be a zava or a nida, or perhaps even a yoledes, sits on a bed, a chair, any other utensil, and even if the tummy person does not come in direct contact with the bed or the chair, the utensil becomes an av hatuma. And this is in Vayikra, Perek Tes Vav, in the parish of Zav. And the pasuk says, V'chol hakli, yochol, kofa se'ah v'yoshav aleha, kofa tirkav v'yoshav aleha, yehi tummy. From the fact that the Torah says that any bedding upon which the Zav sits or reclines becomes Tomei, I might think that that might include even something called a saw barrel. Let's say, for example, you have a very large barrel and you turn it on its side and the Zav sits upon it. Again, what's the size of this barrel? It's over a saw. Or, for example, in a similar case, you have even a barrel that has a half a saw, and once again it was turned over, and the Zav sat on it. I would think it becomes Tomei. Tambalomer asher yoshav olav hazav. Olav is coming to exclude those cases that we mentioned before. It's dafka case of me, shemiyuchad, liyeshiva, yotzazeh, sha'omrlo amod, v'nase malachto. Something that is designated for sitting, it's a real moshav, and then it contracts tuma, so it's designated for sitting, and this is a diuk in the pasuk, because the pasuk could have said that kol kli, it could have said asher yeshev olav, and instead the pasuk says in the future not yoshev olav, but it says yeshev olav. This teaches us that the utensil is yeshev olav, meaning it's susceptible to tumas midras tuma only if not only did he recline or sit on it in the past, but also it is designated to sit on in the future. And this excludes any sort of containers or barrels that the Zav happened to use on a temporary basis, that it was not designated for purposes of yeshiva. And that's what he means, Omdim lo amod, Omdim lo amod v'nasa malachto. That's the malachas of the barrel is in a standing position, not in a sitting position. So this is just a temporary, not a primary function, but a coincidence of function. And with regard to this brisa, the Gemara presents a machlokas between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Elazar Omer, b'midrasos omrim amod v'nasa malachtenu, v'ein omrim b'tmei meis amod v'nasa malachtenu. So here we have a sheet of Rabbi Elazar to differentiate in a fundamental way between two different categories of tuma. This tumas midras, in the case of someone who has a re'ia, a ziva, and there we don't... we don't say, well, amod v'nasa malachtenu, We do say amod v'lnasim lachteru, meaning that we don't say that. Well, now he's using it for sitting purposes. We want it to be a real chair, a designated chair. But with regard to tameh mes, there the halacha is that omrim ain omrim. We don't say amod v'nasim lachteru. So let's say, for example, you have a corpse, and let's say that some utensil was makabel tuma from this corpse. Does it lose its tuma status if it's no longer available for its original function? And the answer is no. It retains its function, its status. And we don't say amod v'nasem alachtenu, that this is just a temporary change. So again, in the case of contracting tumas mes, it doesn't lose its tumah status and its susceptibility for tumah just because it's no longer usable in its original way. As long as it still has some sort of a function, that's enough. But Rabbi Yochanan Omar, af omer b'tmei mes, even in the case of tmei mes, we apply this principle, amod v'nasa malachtenu, meaning that according to Rabbi Yochanan, even in the case of tumas mes, we remove the tumah if the item is changed in such a way that it's no longer designated or suitable for its original function. So we see clearly that Rabbi Yochanan himself is of the opinion that we need what's called